Well, as we parallel the devotional on Proverbs that Tim Keller and his wife put out, we've reached the topic of justice. And we want to talk about taking responsibility for justice. In the Pledge of Allegiance, we pledge in the middle of that, we talk about with justice for all. Why do we say that? We understand that we're a nation of laws, that it's not might that makes right, but that whatever level of society you are, you're expected to be treated in accord with the law, and that that's really a definition of what righteousness would be and what a good nation would be. And that really is rooted in the scriptures, in the way that we treat one another and that we treat one another as human beings. In Micah 6:8, when we were working through that minor prophet, the famous verse, he has told you, O man, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you? And it's just talked about, you know, God, do you want rivers of oil? Do you want me to sacrifice even my firstborn? And God basically is saying, no, here's what I want, very practically. What does the Lord require of you but to do justice, to love kindness, and that's the word for steadfast love or loving loyalty, and to walk humbly with your God. So you look at that verse, and what you find is really the secret to our living right toward one another and treating other people in the right way has to do with our loving loyalty, both to God and to other people, as made in the image of God, and that's rooted in our own relationship to God. So from godliness comes steadfast love. Those that are generally godly have that kind of loyalty. And then out of that then comes justice, where we treat people at every level of society in the right way as those made in the image of God. Love God, love others. On this hang all the law and the prophets. So tonight we want to look at what this justice looks like. When I think of the term justice, I immediately think of courtrooms and those kind of official actions, and certainly it belongs in that kind of venue. But what we're going to find in the book of Proverbs is that this is much more practical, really a day-to-day kind of application, both for the individual as well as for those that exercise some sort of power. We find reference in particular, and this is really where the test of justice comes. We all expect those that have power and influence and wealth to be treated in a proper way, because if you don't treat them in a proper way, you pay the price. The question is, how do you treat those who can't strike back? How do you treat what I'm going to call tonight the vulnerable? Now, the words that Proverbs uses are words like poor, that's the most common word, the needy, the mute, in other words, they can't speak for themselves, destitute, oppressed, those led away to slaughter, afflicted, the fatherless, all of these kinds of terms pointing to those that are in one way or another are vulnerable, that need proper treatment, not on the basis of what they can earn, not on the basis of that they can somehow return the favor or can strike out at you for treating them badly, but those who are really dependent on others for treating them in the right way, the vulnerable. So that's how I've couched all those kinds of terms, and seems to be the emphasis of Proverbs on this subject. So here are the five truths we're looking at from the book of Proverbs. How we treat the vulnerable reveals what we think of God. Now that is true because an understanding that we're created in the image of God dictates how we treat any human being. And we find this Old Testament and New, that our treatment of people reflects what we think of God and our understanding that people are created in God's image. Second, taking advantage of the vulnerable is wicked. That's definition of wickedness, whether we're doing it as a government official or whether we're doing it as an individual, that taking advantage of them is wicked. And I think we understand that. Most of us wouldn't class ourselves as, you know, among the oppressors of society. Most of us aren't in positions to do that, although we might find that we do it more than we realize as we work through this. But that's not all that Proverbs addresses. Actually, this third point is what Proverbs addresses the most. Ignoring the plight of the vulnerable is also sin. So it's not just a matter of the government doing the right thing, but it's also, and those in power, but it's any one of us ignoring that plight. Like, what can I do about it? Number four, God will avenge unjust treatment of the vulnerable. This goes back to that first point, how we treat the vulnerable reflects what we think of God. And then number five, God will reward kind treatment of the vulnerable. So let's start with this first truth. How we treat the vulnerable reveals what we think of God. Proverbs 22:2, the rich and the poor meet together. The Lord is maker of them all. This is going to be the foundation of everything. So I don't have to know a person at all to know that I'm to treat them with respect and to treat them with kindness and justice by very virtue of the fact that no matter what strata of society they're in, they are created by God. The Lord, Yahweh, is maker of them all. Proverbs 17:5, whoever mocks the poor insults his maker. And he who is glad at calamity will not go unpunished. So this whole heart that we might have toward those that are suffering in any way reflects actually our heart toward God. When we mock the poor, we insult our maker, for glad at calamity, God takes note of that and will render punishment. It reminds us that while Proverbs would teach us that laziness, lack of self-discipline, addictions can bring on poverty, there are other causes as well, like calamity. Calamity takes in any sort of harm that could happen to a person. And so poverty could actually come as calamity in any number of ways. In an agrarian society that lived off how the crops did, just a spell of bad weather, famine, could make you poor. Think about investing what you have in order to produce crops, and your livelihood is dependent on what you produce by the end of that season. And because of famine, because of flood, any number of things that might happen, that crop is wiped out. Well, so is your income. And so you could actually, for that season, become suddenly poor. Floods, fires, disabling injuries, large medical bills. Insurance doesn't cover everything. Some of you have been through this. The death of the main breadwinner, or even more regional things. We were up in Uranium City with the Fafnroth up in northern Saskatchewan. Why do you think it's called Uranium City? They mined uranium there, okay? And at one time, it was a city of, like, if I'm remembering correctly, about, I want to say 50,000 or so. Now there's less than 1,000 people because they closed the mines. They're no longer mining there. And so you have a virtual ghost town with just a smattering of people that are there simply because the mines aren't operational. And so somebody that's dependent on that could find themselves in poverty. And then just what happens when there's war? You look at some war-torn regions, and how do you even build wealth? How do you build any kind of stability when things are being wiped out and destroyed? And you've seen plenty of pictures of rubble, and you can imagine what that do to your life. We have members of our church that World War II and what followed after actually left after having a home and a job and everything else, left with nothing but the clothes on their back and whatever they could carry in their suitcase. Imagine what that would be like. And that's being rendered suddenly poor. And so we look on those that are suffering in these ways with the compassion of God. Proverbs 14:31, whoever oppresses a poor man insults his maker, but he who is generous to the needy honors him. So as I think about my love for God, that's going to show in love for others, and particularly those that are in need. And you remember that when we are talking about the the change that happens in a person through being born again, Titus 3, that one of the remarkable things that happens is his whole attitude toward other people and his attention to urgent need. And Paul says, look, teach our people to be devoted to good works, beneficial works, particularly to matters of urgent need. Number two, taking advantage of the vulnerable is wicked. Proverbs 28:3, a poor man who oppresses the poor is a beating rain that leaves no food. When you would expect rain to help with the crop, not to destroy it. You would expect a poor man to treat a fellow poor man the way he would like to be treated. But the reality is that we can render injustice, not just when we're rich and powerful, but even if we're not, by just not treating another person the way we ought to treat another person. We saw it in the parable of the servant who was forgiven this huge debt, and then he goes out and practically strangles a fellow servant that owes far, far less. And of course, in the proverb, the Lord of that servant calls him a wicked servant, the parable that Jesus told. Proverbs 29:7, a righteous man knows the rights of the poor. A wicked man does not understand such knowledge. A wicked man is basically in it for himself, is looking for how he can line his pockets, is looking for how he can increase his power, his wealth, his influence, rather than understanding that we have a connection with one another and we are obligated to take care of one another. So you have this dichotomy of righteous and wicked and the dividing line is what we actually think of other people and how we treat them. And we saw this throughout the minor prophets, right? As they addressed Judah or Israel and even the pagan nations, they held them into account for how they treated those who were in vulnerable spots. This is a quintessential and essential definition of right and wrong, whether you're talking about governments or whether you're talking about individuals. Keller remarks in his December 11th devotional, the very purpose and function of government is to do justice, and in particular, to protect the poor from being exploited by powerful interest. This also tells us that poverty cannot be addressed fully by private charity, but requires, as we have seen, changing social structures and laws. He goes on to write, social reform moves beyond the relief of immediate needs and seeks to change social conditions that aggravate or create that need. In other words, as we look for how we treat other people, what we do in our families, what we do in our church, what we do in our communities, is not only look at what can I do right now to meet a need, but what systems can I put in place that will continue to meet those needs. And righteous people think that way. They think about what's going to provide for others. The prophets, Keller writes, denounce unfair wages, Jeremiah 22, corrupt business practices, Amos 8, legal systems weighted in favor of the rich and the influential, Deuteronomy 24, Leviticus 19, a system of lending capital that gouged the person of modest means, Leviticus 19, Exodus 22. Daniel calls a pagan government, Nebuchadnezzar in particular, to account for its lack of mercy to the poor. Nebuchadnezzar was a great builder, but he oppressed his people, certain people, in order to get it done, in order to have those projects. So taking advantage of the vulnerable is wicked. Number three, ignoring the plight of the vulnerable is sin. So this is the sin of neglect. The sin of neglect. You know, I don't have to kill a person by beating them to death. I can just leave them to starve. I can just expose them. Now, this is what in the first century, rather than abortion, unwanted babies were just left to be exposed, to be eaten by wild dogs, just to be exposed and to die that way. And one thing believers did was to take those children, those abandoned children, infants, into their home and rear them, rescue them. And so they could have just let it go with a sin of neglect. They didn't actually have a hand in murdering those children, but their neglect of them would have been just as unrighteous. So this is the sin of neglect, of turning the other way, of abdicating your duty to help others when you have the ability to do so. This is the most common sin that Proverbs addresses. The reality is that most people, most of us, don't have positions of great power. It is easy for us, therefore, to assume wrongly that we can do nothing. And God does not somehow hold me accountable for what I do. But the reality is, God does hold you accountable for what you can do. He doesn't hold you accountable for what you can't do. He does hold you accountable for what you can do. And the reality is, this whole justice thing, if we think of it as just treating other human beings as created in the image of God, treating them with love for a neighbor, there are needs that any one of us can address. It is the godly, righteous thing to do, and it actually shows up in a thousand small ways that may seem insignificant. For instance, we have some in our congregation who make it to our services with great effort. You might see them being wheeled in on a wheelchair or walking on a cane, and they're obviously difficult. You're walking on a slanted floor. There's difficulties in just getting here. Okay, so how would people who love God treat those vulnerable people? Well, there's going to be people that help them get in and out of the door, right? People that get the wheelchair, people that roll them into place. When the service is over, I'm getting very specific because just heard about this today. When the service is over and there's somebody slowly getting out into the aisle and you are limber and fit and you're ready for lunch, righteousness would mean that you wait and you give them room. And you help them at the very least, you don't run them over, and you help them. And you can be 5 years old and practice this kind of justice, or 5 years old and practice that kind of neglect. And sometimes that happens here. It's unfortunate when it happens here. So have your eyes open for those in need. Look into the faces of people as you see them come in and try to read what's going on there. There are ways that you can show love and care for those that are vulnerable. Proverbs 31, 8 and 9. Open your mouth for the mute, for the rights of all who are destitute. Open your mouth, judge righteously, defend the rights of the poor and needy. These are actually words written to King Lemuel to avoid any vice or indulgence that would undermine his ability as king to care for the needs of those over whom he ruled. So this is directly addressed to a person in government and the need to make sure that he's not, because he has power and wealth, indulging in a way that renders him ineffective at helping those who need protection. Proverbs 24, 11 to 12, rescue those who are being taken away to death. Hold back those who are stumbling to the slaughter. If you say, behold, we did not know this, does not he who weighs the heart perceive it? Does not he who keeps watch over your soul know it? And will he not repay man according to his work? And in this case, the work of neglect, of turning the other way. And we, all kinds of historical examples of this kind of thing going on. And sometimes it's a fearful thing to speak up, to insert yourself into a situation, particularly that could be dangerous, for the sake of protecting the vulnerable, takes some degree of courage. And perhaps Keller refers to a well-known statement by Martin Niemöller, who said, happened in Germany when the Nazis first came for the socialist, then for the Jews, and other unwanted citizens, and hardly anyone spoke up. And so, when they came for me, there was no one left to speak for me. When we understand our connection as those created in the image of God, then when we see injustice being done, we do what we can to stop it. Proverbs 21:3, to do righteousness and justice is more acceptable to the Lord than sacrifice. That was the point of Micah 6:8, right? So what is more disgusting than to have people talking all holy and singing their hymns and reading their Bibles and neglecting or abusing the vulnerable? That's like blasphemy. That's like treating worship as where a den of bandits would gather, thinking that somehow they're magically protected because they say some words of worship to God while they live in a way that shows they think little of God or of his created human beings. Proverbs 3:27, do not withhold good from those to whom it is due when it's in your power to do it. This could be as simple as paying somebody what they've earned. But more than that, just knowing there's good you could do for them and you have the power to do it, Proverbs says, don't withhold that. Now, why is that? Keller writes, the world is God's. And if he has given you more of it to steward, to manage, than someone else, that does not mean it belongs wholly to you. Like any steward, any manager, you must use the true owner's wealth as he wishes it to be used. So what do you have? That's what God gave you. How does God want you to use it? Because ultimately it's his. Proverbs 13:23 illustrates this very practically in the Old Testament system of how they cared for the poor. The fallow ground of the poor would yield much food, but it is swept away through injustice. I actually referred to this verse a few weeks ago, and I think I missed the mark on the explanation, and I want to kind of set that right tonight. I want to have you read a cross-reference, Exodus 23:10-11. For 6 years you shall sow your land and gather in its yield, but the seventh year you shall let it rest and lie fallow. In other words, unplowed, unplanted. That the poor of your people may eat, and what they leave the beasts of the field may eat. You shall do likewise with your vineyard and with your olive orchard. Okay, so this verse is actually referring to a law of God that every seventh year, the sabbatical year, the year of stopping, they would not plow their fields, they would just let them grow naturally, and the poor were allowed to go and glean what they could for their food from those fields. In the same way that in a normal year, they would glean food from the corners of the field. They weren't supposed to go right to the corner, they're supposed to leave the corners for people to glean. People like Ruth, for instance, gleaning in the fields of Boaz. So go back to this verse, Proverbs 13:23, the fallow ground of the poor, so this is that fallow ground left for them, would yield much food, but it is swept away through injustice. Now think about what that means has happened. God designed this law in an agriculture society to provide food for the poor if they were willing to work to glean and gather. But we know historically that Israel largely ignored this. In fact, the 70 years captivity was making up for all the sabbatical years that they skipped. This neglect of the God-ordained pattern that took account for the needs as well as the dignity of the poor ended up sweeping away food that they should have had access to. And that kind of neglect, just going ahead and plowing your fields and planting every year instead of leaving it fallow one year, God calls that injustice. It was unjust, it was not righteous because God had prescribed it by law, but it's also unjust because it removed the means, the mechanism by which the nation on an individual level could actually take care of those that were poor and needy, and they could access what they needed in order to eat. Now, you know, as we think about our own society and we think about trying to help people, you know, there are times to give a handout, but ultimately what we want to find is figure out ways that we can provide for the needy where they can work. They're not just taking a handout, but where they can invest something, they can invest time and energy and they can end up providing for their needs. It might be something like this. It might be, you know, you're perfectly capable of mowing your own lawn, but you hire somebody who needs income to do it because you have the cash to be able to pay them, and you can use that time in another way. There's just a variety of ways that you might think about how you could help. And I just want to put that out there for you to think about. How could you help somebody that lets them keep their dignity? You're not creating laziness, but also provides them a means of providing for themselves when they don't have the work and they don't have the income. There are times in our congregation that people are out of work. And so if you have some kind of job available, you have some kind of means where they could pitch in and help. Maybe they can help butcher your deer and take part of the venison. Maybe they can help pick part of your garden and they can take some of that. Ways that you can provide for them in an honorable way. Number four, God will avenge unjust treatment of the vulnerable. Proverbs 22, 22, and 23, do not rob the poor because he is poor, or crush the afflicted at the gate. The gate would be the place of business in the town or place of government. For the Lord will plead their cause. So it's like the Lord steps up as their advocate, steps up as their lawyer, and he will plead their cause and rob the life of those who rob them. Some people think that as long as they can get away with taking advantage, all's fair. So if I can underpay my employees, if I can hold on the money that I owe them and gain a little more interest before I give it back to them, all kinds of ways that I can cut them off, I'm not getting away with that. God becomes their defender. Proverbs 23, 10 and 11, do not remove an ancient landmark. An ancient landmark would mark the boundaries of family properties to pass from one generation to another. It's not talking about never changing tradition. I've heard it used that way a lot. In fact, they call it landmarkism. The text is referring to the way real estate was done. And it was not to pass out of the family. It was the family. And so don't move that landmark or enter the fields of the fatherless. For their redeemer is strong. A redeemer would be a kinsman or a friend that steps up for the sake of this individual, like Boaz did for Ruth. He will plead their cause against you. So sometimes, you know, some people, they're devoted to wealth and building their empires, and they take advantage of people right and left. And God says, don't do that. He will avenge that unjust treatment. Proverbs 22:8, whoever sows injustice will reap calamity, and the rod of his fury will fail. Proverbs 28:8, whoever multiplies his wealth by interest and profit gathers it for him who is generous to the poor. Now, this isn't saying that you can't give somebody a business loan. They're going to take that money as a commodity and make more money. That's legitimate. It's talking about somebody that's in dire straits and is out of money and is in a destitute, and you don't just lend them money or give them money. You actually charge them interest for that money as well. And in the Old Testament economy, and I personally believe this is useful in our time as well, to take advantage of somebody's poverty, to make money off of their calamity is wrong. And that's the point that's being made here. It's not just that, it's not that it's wrong to get interest, but it's wrong to get interest to make money off of somebody's calamity. Number five, God will reward kind treatment of the vulnerable. This applies to the individual. Proverbs 19:17, whoever is generous to the poor lends to the Lord, and he will repay him for his deed. You believe that God will keep the books that way. And then Proverbs 29:14, this is at the level of the government. If a king faithfully judges the poor, his throne will be established forever. As I read that verse, it struck me that I'm not sure any government has ever been that faithful. But we know one, the perfect king of an everlasting kingdom, who will do absolutely right in his taking care of his people, in his rendering of justice, in his throne will indeed be established forever. God honors those who out for the vulnerable. He rewards the kind treatment of them. So these five truths from Proverbs, how we treat the vulnerable reveals what we think of God. Taking advantage of the vulnerable is wicked, and also ignoring the plight of the vulnerable is sin. God will avenge unjust treatment of the vulnerable and will reward kind treatment of the vulnerable. So this week, look for people you can help. Some of you live this way. I know. I watch you do this every week. And this is the way godly people actually live. And as we go out tonight, don't trample anybody. As we show kindness to those that are vulnerable. Let's go to the Lord in prayer. Father, thank you for your word. We pray for your blessing on what remains of this evening. For it's in Christ's name we pray. Amen.